Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We're going to read three verses this morning. Canto 5, Chapter 1, 8, 9, and 10. And they're all related. Since we have some with us that haven't been here for the earlier verses, just a little background. This is the event is taking place very early in the life of Brahma, not just the day of Brahma. Very serious situation where they're selecting a ruler of the universe. A little different than the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and having their debates. It's a very different system. Much more civilized. Swayambhuva Manu is directly born from the body of Lord Brahma. No wife was involved. No mother, no birth, just directly from his body. As well as Shatrurupa, his wife of Swayambhuva Manu. And the eldest son, there are two sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapada. Priyavrata requested when he was very, very young, he had no interest, even when he was very young, in worldly affairs. He wanted just to dedicate his life for achieving pure devotional service. And he did. So his father gave his consent, and Priyavrata went to the side of a very special place, Mandamanana Mountain. We'll hear about that. And for literally for generations, he lived for a long time. His younger brother became king. The son of Uttanapada, his younger brother, became king, Dhruva Maharaj, and his sons became king and king and king and king, and the lineage of kings broke in Canto 4 with the sons of King Prachinibari, the Prachetas. They didn't become king. They went in the same direction as Priyavrata. So Swayambhuva Manu had a problem, and he needed somebody to rule the universe. So he went to his elder son, Priyavrata, and found him on the mountainside, even more deeply absorbed in Krishna bhakti, and as a result, more deeply detached, and asked him to become the emperor of the universe, please. And Priyavrata didn't say no, and he didn't say yes. He gave his doubt. If I do this, it puts me at risk. It puts my devotion to the Supreme Lord at risk, because, well, we'll hear more detail, but to become king, I have to have a queen, and I'll have to have royal treasury, and I'll have to have yada, 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 and it's really easy to get distracted by all of that and covered and forgetful of my relationship with the personality of Godhead. So that's my concern. So the philosophical discussion that was pointed out very clearly by the person who's hearing all this, Maharaj Parikshit, is saying, I have a doubt. On the one hand, but on the other hand, on the one hand, how can someone who is fixed in devotion, like Priyavrata is fixed in devotion, become involved in and implicated in and covered by attachment for family life and kingdom and position and all those upadis, all those designations that cover the soul. How is it possible? And then the other side is, how can someone who's then attached become a pure, perfected soul afterwards? Because that's what happened with Priyavrata. So they're mutually contradictory. And can you explain? So Shukadeva Goswami gives right away the explanation in principle and then elaborates through the history. So the principle is, bhakti is eternal. Bhakti cannot be destroyed. Bhakti can become covered. Just like land can be covered by the sea. The tide comes in and the land is covered. And then the tide goes out. And then there may be a tidal wave. It covers more than just the normal position of the tide comes in, that tide goes out. And then when that tidal wave recedes, then it's back to normal again. Similarly, bhakti is eternal. Just as Krishna is eternal and the soul is eternal, the relation is eternal, and one who engages in bhakti, that's protected by the Supreme Lord, by the Supreme Lord's internal potency. It's the internal potency. It can't cover the internal potency. Another, the sun is in the sky. There may be clouds in the sky, so you can't see the fullness and brightness and heat and light of the sun. But the sun doesn't become covered. Our vision becomes covered. And it's similar, very similar. In fact, it's identical to what Kunti is saying in Kunti's prayers, the last ones we discussed Tuesday evening. So the power of bhakti, the philosophical discussion is, on the one hand, the power of bhakti overcoming coverings, and the other hand, how it is that one who's fixed in bhakti might become covered. And that's the topic, philosophical topic. And then the narration goes that when Swayambhuva Manu came, he didn't come alone. He came with a whole entourage, mentioned specifically, Agastya, Muni, and Marichi, and Vashishta, and the personified Vedas. I mean, he had a whole entourage. And that's Brahma came with those personalities. Brahma came with those personalities. Narada is the spiritual master of all those lineages of kings, starting with Swayambhuva Manu and Uttanapada and Dhruva and Priyavrata. So Priyavrata was feeling a little courage. Narada understands renunciation. He'll support me. But Narada understood the qualification of Priyavrata, but he also understood the circumstance. So now, literally, there's three of the 12 Mahajans: Swayambhuva Manu, Narada Muni, and here comes Lord Brahma. So we heard yesterday that from the topmost planet in the universe, Satyaloka, he's come down to, you know, Bhuloka, because of the significance of the concern. And now we're going to hear what happens. As Lord Brahma, this is text 8. As Lord Brahma descended on his carrier, the great swan, all the residents of the planets named Sitaloka, Gandharvaloka, Sadhyaloka, and Charanaloka, as well as great sages and demigods flying in their different airplanes, assembled within the canopy of the sky to receive Lord Brahma and worship him as he received respect and adoration from the residents of the various planets Lord Brahma appeared just like the full moon surrounded by the illuminating stars. Lord Brahma's great swan then arrived at the border of Gandha Madana Hill and approached Prince Priyavrata, who was sitting there. He wasn't sitting alone, he was with Swayambhuva Manu and Narada, his father and his spiritual master. Purport. It appears from this description that there is regular interplanetary travel between the planets of the demigods. Another significant point is that there is a planet covered mostly by great mountains, one of which is Gandha Madana Hill. That seems to indicate that in this earthly realm, there's various planets that within this Bhuloka, that seems to indicate, and because there is a planet covered mostly by great mountains. Now there's parts of this planet that are covered by great mountains, but what he's saying is there's a planet covered mostly by great mountains, and one of which is Gandha Madana Hill. So if you go looking in the Earth planet for Gandha Madana Hill, you might have to go to another planet in our planetary system. Priyavrata, Narada, and Swayambhuva Manu were sitting on this hill, according to Brahma Samhita. Each universe is filled with different planetary systems, and every system has a unique opulence. For example, on Siddhaloka, all the residents are very advanced in the powers of mystic yoga. They can fly from one planet to another without airplanes or other flying machines. Similarly, the residents of Gandharvaloka are expert in musical science, and those on Sadhyaloka, mentioned in the verse, are all great saints. The interplanetary system undoubtedly exists, and residents of different planets may go from one to another. On this earth, however, this is Prabhupada's fifth canto message, we have not invented any machine that can go directly from one planet to another, although an unsuccessful attempt has been made to go directly to the moon. Nothing further is said. He's just getting warmed up. Now, it's something about the structure of the universe, because it's mentioned. Seven upper, seven lower planetary systems. Middle, upper, and lower, so the same as in all scriptures of the world. There's heaven, there's hell, and there's here. And, you know, so we can go to either heaven or hell or stay here. The more detailed is seven upper. So there's the three that are mentioned in Gayatri Mantra and also in the fifth canto Bhagavatam. Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, and Swargaloka. So Swargaloka is the heavenly region that was mentioned. Then there's the demigods there in that Swargaloka region, and just below them are where the Siddhas and Charanas and Gandharvas reside. So it's in between where we are and the heavenly planets. So vertically, Brahma is descending from the topmost. So Maharloka, Janloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. He's descending from Satyaloka to Bhuloka, and he has, you know, as he's descending, the Svargaloka residents, the demigods, they're greeting him, and then the Bhuvarloka residents, denizens, they're greeting him, appropriate to their particular gift. Some are traveling in without machines, and some are singing, and some are offering learned prayers. We'll hear about the learned prayers in a moment. And he's come before the place where Priyavrata, you know, the guest of honor, I mean the host of honor, is being visited. Text 9. Lord Brahma, the father of Narada Muni, is the supreme person within the universe. As soon as Narada saw the great swan, he could understand that Lord Brahma had arrived. Therefore, he immediately stood up along with Swayambhuva Manu and his son Priyavrata, whom Narada was instructing. They folded their hands and began to worship Lord Brahma with great respect. Purport. As stated in the previous verse, Lord Brahma was accompanied by other demigods, but his specific carrier was the great swan. Therefore, as soon as Narada Muni saw the swan, he could understand that his father, Lord Brahma, who was also known as Hiranyagarbha, was arriving. Thus, he immediately stood up with Swayambhuva Manu and his son Priyavrata to receive Lord Brahma and offer him respect. Text 10. My dear King Parikshit, this is Shukadev Goswami speaking, because Lord Brahma had finally descended from Satyaloka to Bhuloka, Narada Muni, Prince Priyavrata, and Swayambhuva Manu came forward to offer him objects of worship and praise him in highly qualified language according to Vedic etiquette. At that time, Lord Brahma, the original person of this universe, felt compassion for Priyavrata. And looking upon him with a smiling face, he spoke as follows. So the Sanskrit is sa daya, daya is compassion, with compassion, and hasa means smiling. So there's a rasa, hasya rasa. And then the smile is a message in itself. We'll hear about the message. That Lord Brahma descended from Satyaloka to see Priyavrata indicates that the matter was very serious. Narada Muni had come to advise Priyavrata about the value of spiritual life, knowledge, renunciation, and bhakti. And Lord Brahma knew that Narada's instructions were very impressive. Therefore, unless Lord Brahma personally went to Gandhamadana Hill to request Priyavrata, Lord Brahma knew that Prince Priyavrata would not accept his father's order. So the indication is indirect and subtle, but Narada promotes renunciation. There's this, you know, Swayambhuva Manu saying, take on the kingdom. Narada leaning in the direction of renunciation. So Brahma came because he knew Narada's messages are impressive. He might say no instead of yes. So he came. Brahma's purpose was to break Priyavrata's determination. Because that was mentioned previously. Brahma must sometimes, because ruling over this universe is a great responsibility, Brahma must force many Manus in different ages to take charge of universal affairs. That's purport of 7. It's a pretty strong language, force. Here he's saying break his determination. But not break him, break his determination. Therefore, Brahma first looked upon Priyavrata with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life. Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. Although devotional service would remain intact. Although he would prevail, senior person speaking to his son's son, his grandson, to accept some responsibility, the smile and compassion was it wouldn't harm his devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnava, everything is possible. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior person. One usually becomes liberated and perfect by executing the regulative principles set down in the Shastras. Nonetheless, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Paragraph. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and as joking competition sometimes takes place between the grandson and grandfather, in this case also, Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he rule the universe. Thus, Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, quote, "My dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it." Actually, Brahma had come to praise Priyavrata for his high standard of renunciation, austerity, penance, and devotion, so that he would not be deviated from devotional service, even though he would accept household life. This is, you know, the philosophical topic is now being addressed, at least an element of it. You know, blessings. And the strength of focus of someone in devotional service to achieve these things, or by the means of these things to achieve unflinching shelter at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. That's not just meditation. That's bhakti. And so he's honoring the bhakti of Priyavrata, saying, don't worry. You're okay. Last paragraph. In this verse, one important word is sukta vakena, parentheses, by Vedic hymns. Sukta means prayers, like Purusha Sukta. Sukta means prayers. And vakena, vak means to speak, by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there is the following prayer to Lord Brahma: Hiranya Garbha Samavartatagre Bhutasya Jata Patir Eka Asit. Brahma was received with appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcomed according to the Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased. Just thinking of the Republican National Convention and what that's going to be like. Filled with the opposite of dignity and respectability and Vedic culture and respectful Vedic hymns, and it's really sad. Two things. One is this Kripa Siddhi message. Prabhupada has taught us that there are three categories of perfection: Nitya Siddha, eternally perfect; Sadhana Siddha, perfection through devotional practice mentioned; and then the third is Kripa Siddha. It's rare, but it's possible. And he's pointing to the descending mercy from Lord Brahma is that's how it's going to take place with Priyavrata after he does the household program. Now certainly you could look at it another way. That is, one can enter the household ashram and properly follow the vidhis, the rules and regulations for household ashram, and achieve perfection that way. But he's got it double. He's already demonstrated for long duration that, you know, he can handle vidhis, he can handle regulations of devotional practice. So just transfer them to household life from renounced life, and there you got it. But it's double. It's this very special mercy, kripa, siddhi. Then Prabhupada's point is, in the spiritual realm, there's not a pecking order. Oh, you're a kripa siddha? You didn't do the sadhana? And I'm a nitya siddha. There's not any haughtiness like that. Siddha is siddha. But there are, for our sake, for analysis sake, there are categories. This one, this one, this one. But siddha is siddha. Another point is just taking from the first canto Bhagavatam, there's pages or verses and verses, sections again and again, covering, and other cantos of the Bhagavatam as well, covering the qualification of a leader. Or qualification of a king, if you put it in that language, but it's qualification of a leader. And to have Vedic culture predominate or prevail, there must be qualified king, must be a king with qualification. We understand from Mahabharata, for example, one of Yudhisthira's many hesitations was Drona is a good organizer. Things are running smoothly. So what's the problem? Let him just rule. He's doing a good job. Krishna didn't want that because someone may be good at organizing, but if their spirit is clearly offensive and demoniac, such a person should not be a ruler. So a ruler is not just somebody that can get things done and organize. A ruler or leader must be spiritually qualified, first and foremost. And so there are not optional cultural features that a leader or a qualified spiritual personality should cultivate and be trained in and display, not just externally but internally. Spiritual qualification is not something that's cosmetic, it's something that's inside. Say it again, according to the Bhagavatam, without that qualified person, and in this age of Kali, where's the qualified person? It's such an embarrassment when there's unqualified persons vying for a position that only a qualified person should possess, and they behave like animals. It's embarrassing. So, we're hearing, in this case, Lord Brahma wanting a qualified person. And Priyavrata is qualified. That's why, even he's unwilling, he's the right person because he's qualified. That's part of his qualification. Not attached to being having a label or having some position of distinction and honor. He's attached to the personality of Godhead. That's a qualified person. Not easy to get that qualification. And it's easy to get distracted by pursuing a position. Or even if the position, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when one becomes a little spiritually qualified, little, then people offer labha, puja, and pratishta. One gets title, one gets honor, one gets worship, and it's one of the four categories, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, of impurities of heart. Impurities of heart arise from a little success in spiritual life. And then being the enjoyer of that little. It's another trick of Maya. So what to speak of being the emperor of the universe? The renunciation or detachment that arises from attachment to the Supreme Lord is the spiritual qualification. Just like Yudhisthira. What Krishna wanted was, before he departed, the world would be ruled by a qualified person. Duryodhana may be able to organize and, think and apparently run smoothly. But if the heart of that person is literally offensive and demoniac, that person needs to be removed. So Krishna wanted him removed, not to rule. And Krishna's will prevailed. Kali Yuga is topsy-turvy, say the least, and it gets more disturbed, or everything becomes inverted in rapid succession. Just the nature of the age. So it's very difficult, put it mildly, very difficult to establish Vedic culture in the age of Kali. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy to even people aren't qualified, to give them access to spiritual connectivity through the chanting of the holy name. And bless them, those who take to the chanting of the holy name, to come to the stage of Braja Prema. It's like, wow. Like that little video that Radhika Raman was saying, that there couldn't be two more opposite cultures. What Prabhupada was, I liked his language. He chose his words very carefully. It was very daring. But behind him was the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was the deliverer of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And similarly, we have the opportunity for that. If someone gives you $1 million, maybe that'll happen in your life sometime, someone gives you $1 million, you can misuse it. The studies have shown those people that win the lottery, their lives get completely spoiled, because they don't have the adhikar to handle that wealth. They're people that were their friends become their enemies, and they often squander it in addictions and intoxications and crazy stuff, because it doesn't always happen like that, but statistically it's like that. So if we may receive Lord Chaitanya's special mercy, and how are we going to use it? We have to be a little sober and understand that the opportunity that's being provided, and to come into the association of Vaishnavas and properly regard the Vaishnavas. knowing that like us, they may have some shortcomings. They're less than qualified like I'm less than qualified. Now, how do I conduct myself wisely, you know, with the view of manifesting Lord Chaitanya's mercy in this world? We shouldn't be foolish, and we shouldn't be offensive. So it's we have to be very careful. Okay, so any comments or questions? Yes.
Well, you're talking about, you know, that we don't have any qualified people to really be in positions of government.
Yeah.
From what you've seen in India, do you think India would be better off with the democracy they got now or some kind of Vedic roster?
Well, neither would be okay without a qualified person. And so Prabhupada didn't advocate two things. Commonly, Prabhupada would say democracy by design is ruled by the ignorance. The pyramid effect of there's far more mode of ignorance, little less mode of passion, and a whole lot less mode of goodness. And so if democracy is one man, one vote, and there's more people at the bottom of the pyramid than at the top, so they're likely to elect somebody by design of the system, not recognizing qualifications. Somebody promises sense gratification, and they may be able to deliver some objects of sense gratification, so he becomes our leader. We vote on the guy that can give us some sense gratification. And then when he doesn't come through, then we want him out. So the system is, by design, is far from attractive. Then the flip side is, any system is okay as long as there's a qualified person. The problem is, qualified person is absent, not whether the system, this one, that one. So the kings were qualified by variety of ways, which aren't present in the age of Kali, and therefore European history shows, you know, the gradual change from monarchy to other things and other things and other things to get, and it's just the modes of nature, the darker modes of nature rising. I've heard Rabindra Swarup Prabhu and Sataputra Prabhu both discuss this, you know, at length, because they're both historians of European history. You know, the church falling and the governmental system falling side by side or parallel to get what we have now. I'll just end with this. I saw an article, read an article. Someone led me to an article by Harvard University economics professor, explaining a famous person, is still alive, saying democracy worked when God was very prominent, because people came from Europe for religious freedom, and God was a very, you know, in God we trust. But as prosperity goes further, then God becomes in the back seat, and then he doesn't have a seat. Godlessness prevails, and there's where democracy that once was very powerful and, you know, dynamic and whatever good things you might say, it'll fail. It's just, this is an economics professor. So the advance of Kali, you can have any system that won't work. Or a qualified leader must be in place to rule. And it's not easy to get a qualified person voted favorably by people that are primarily in ignorance, and what they want is sense gratification, not wholesomeness. They want wholesome sense gratification. To some degree. It's a challenge. Something else? Yes?
Two questions. One relating to, as Prabhupada writes in the scripture, as the sun rises, one can see oneself and sees the sun in the process of devotional service, the self-realization. So the rising of the sun is, how am I supposed to understand? In the beginning, the sun rays are, one is able to see the form of Krishna, or is it for first one will...
Before you see the form of the sun, you see the light of the sun.
Okay.
Yes?
Yes.
And then you see, boop, there's a little, you know, the sun is just peeping over the horizon. But the rays are not so strong. Mm-hmm. And it looks really big. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes more and more. So, it's the beginning is not seeing the form of Krishna. The beginning is you feel the presence of Krishna. You feel connected in faith with mercy of Krishna. You feel that. You sense that. It's palpable. It's present in your life. But, you know, it's not, no longer nighttime, it's dawn. And you can see objects that you couldn't see before the sun rose. Okay? Like that. That's how it begins.
Thank you. And the second question, this is not my idea, but I want to ask this question. One who attains the stage of bhava, by the mercy of Krishna, one has realized this eternal relationship and his own swarup, but yet acting in the same material world, how does he function by carrying that swarup within himself?
He externally acts the same and internally is absorbed. That's how. Externally, you would not know the difference between somebody that is and somebody is not. Hmm. But the difference is that internally they're absorbed. And externally they're behaving normal.
Says in the purport, many persons have achieved perfection simply by the blessings of such a master or the superior. So would you like to elaborate on that?
No. I did already. I just said it's rare. Ah, here's one elaboration. Prabhupada said, although it's possible, you should not count on it. He said, it's possible for a university to award an honorary degree. But don't expect an honorary degree. You enroll in the university, and you take the exams, and you get the certificate. You have graduated from the university. But it's possible you can get an honorary degree. There's an elaboration. Very simple, very, very straightforward, very obvious. It's possible. Very rare. Don't count on it.
Similar to that, but yesterday I heard about the Tulasi parlor. Same thing. They say you have benefit, but we shouldn't expect that, right?
She should have.
They say that, like the way she asked, yesterday one person said, if we were Tulasi.
There was just one word. I didn't catch what you said. There must be what?
The benefits.
Benefit. There we go. Benefit.
So they say that we should think about that, right?
Well, why not?
That's all.
I mean, there's spiritual benefit. We glorify the mercy of Krishna that way. You take Krishna prasadam. There's benefit. You chant the holy name. There's benefit. You worship the deity. There's benefit. You do. You know. There's benefit. Let me finish. One is, I want, I get. I do because I get. That's the caution. Don't do because you get. Do because it's all glories to Krishna. Krishna is very merciful. But in the beginning, um, We calculate. We're moved by the mode of passion and ignorance, a whole bunch. So because of those modes being very prevalent, one may take up this or that or the other thing because there's a benefit. There's a nice one of 18,000 nice verses in the Bhagavatam is akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, which means someone may be in any one of these three categories. No material desire. All material desire. Desiring liberation. What's best? Tivrena bhakti yogena. So someone may say, oh, I'm going to get a benefit. Very good. Tivra bhakti. Someone else may say, I have no attraction for anything. What should they do? Tivra bhakti. One size fits all. Someone else, I want liberation. Tivra bhakti. So, here's another way of saying the same thing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is Prabhupada speaking in a lecture. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Shikshastakam, Bhavitam. So, oh my dear Lord, I do not want this or that or the other thing. I don't want wealth, nadanam. I don't want followers. I don't want beautiful women. I only want one thing, your devotional service. Janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir ahaitaki tui. I only want your devotional service, and I don't even want liberation. Janma janmani. So I birth after birth. I'm not looking for liberation, I'm not looking for something of this world, not looking for something of that world, I just want devotional service. Although Lord Chaitanya taught that, Prabhupada explained, in the beginning of one's devotional service, one should desire to go back to Godhead. That's, I want something, I want this benefit, I want to go back to Godhead. And part of that, I want to go back to Godhead, is this place is crazy, let me out of here. Cuckoo, I want to go back to Godhead. I want a benefit. So in the beginning, Prabhupada was explaining, that's good. We should desire to go back to Godhead. We should be eager for the benefit that will be come to us through devotional service. And as we get more purified, the lower modes of nature become less active upon us, and higher illumination of the modes of nature and love for Krishna becomes more awakened, then, you know, the benefit feature of devotional service becomes less and less and less. But in the beginning, there's benefit.
I thought we want to do whatever is good, practice, but we should think about the benefit the God will give the best.
Okay, so we to be honest with ourselves, we should, you know, recognize what our position is and act according to our position. We can aspire for something that's higher than our present position, but we should also be honest with what our position is and act from that position, aspiring for the higher position, always. And then as you reach a higher position, acknowledge your position and aspire for the higher position. You should always be progressive. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching. Otherwise, you're stuck. Don't be complacent. Always be aspiring, but also be honest with what your position is. Self-honesty, along with aspiring for further progress on the path of spiritual life. And with that comes its benefits. And one of them being less harassment by the material nature. More peaceful. Less agitation. Less turmoil of the age of Kali, even though it may be around us, one can still be peaceful. But that the goal is not be peaceful. The goal is be in Krishna's service. But for the time being, I may want just a little peacefulness, please. A little bit. Anything else? Yes.
When writing this verse, Lord Brahma is indicating that Priyavrata will not be out of touch with devotional service. But then, after he's been married for some time, Priyavrata feels that he's been implicated by matter. Is that out of humility that he feels that way?
Well. From even the previous verses that we read, one can take it either way. Meaning, it's coming. He's speaking out of humility, and he's really not at all influenced by matter. Or, he's influenced by matter, but so the bhakti is covered. And you can look at it either way, and even what we read previously. The purports, Prabhupada speak both ways. So it's one of those things that it's not, this is right. If this is right, then that's wrong. And if that's right, then this is wrong. It's not the binary thing. One can look at the same thing in two different ways. In either case, bhakti is eternal. That's the main message. Bhakti cannot be destroyed by anything material. It's the most valuable thing. It's more valuable than gold. The value of gold fluctuates. The value of bhakti doesn't. Okay, we'll end. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.